We're back. It is an honor to be with Anthony Lewis, Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon. We were speaking just very recently with poets, and they talked about the necessity for deep quiet for anything important to happen. We talk about all of these ideas as they are expressed and the freedom to have the thought and to act upon them. The ability to do that in a deep quiet, which seems to me kind of what the Constitution offers us, is that deep quiet. That's critical to these essential freedoms, isn't it?
What a good phrase, deep quiet. I like it. We have very little opportunity for deep quiet today. It's a very fast-paced society. If you look at television or you think about what politicians have to go through, spending all day, even when it's not an election, you're raising money, and their life doesn't have a lot of opportunities for reflection, does it? And you wonder how somebody who was a truly reflective, inward person like Thomas Jefferson could possibly make it in politics today. He couldn't. He couldn't stand it. Remember what John F. Kennedy said when he invited all the American Nobel Prize winners to dinner at the White House, and he addressed them saying, "There's more concentrated brain power in this room tonight than there has been since Thomas Jefferson dined here alone."
Indeed.
And, well, that requires reflection, deep quiet. We don't have much of that anymore.
You talked about Holmes changing his mind, and it calls to mind, I'll murder it, but John Maynard Keynes said at one point that when the information changes, the evidence changes, I change my mind. What do you do? And it seems to me that that's at the heart of what we're talking about here, that if we don't have those conversations, if we don't get it, you know, if we don't at least engage, know that there are other perspectives out there, then we never acknowledge that evidence, nor are we capable of changing our minds.
As we speak, we're in the middle of the very process that exemplifies the necessity for free exchange of opinions, ideas, facts, and that's the election. We're in a nominating process, and we will have an election before long, in which everybody's ideas are up in the open, and as far as we know, of course, they may have hidden ideas, but they're trying to persuade us with their open ideas, and we debate them, and people's minds change. Nothing could be more obvious than minds have changed during the campaign.
There's another piece of this. You don't point to it. It's implicit, and it's something I care about deeply. The tendency is to say that a good citizen votes, and we've talked about there's more to that. A good citizen votes informed, which means that the ability to get information is important. But another key role is as a jury member. It's not dead center of what you're talking about with the First Amendment, and yet it is that ability to disagree, to advocate strongly a different perspective, and then for citizens to sit together, hopefully having had this experience before, and come to a decision, which is ultimately how we discern whether that justice is in fact being delivered.
It's another process that's protected by the Constitution,
right?
The right to trial by jury, very important. I agree with you.
Of one's peers.
I entirely agree with you. I served on one civil jury, not an important case, but it was very instructive, and I had a lot of respect for it when I finished. People were open and talking to each other, and it was a good process. And I think it's reminds one of one's place as a citizen in the system. You're going to actually decide something very important, certainly important to the person who's involved in the case or the persons. And I think it's wonderful. I think the jury system is terrific.
I want to talk about one other element in this. We have 2 or 3 minutes to do it. America is so overwhelmingly controlled by corporations at the moment. And that has so many different implications, not only for the press, for the media, the information media. How do we begin to address, in the spirit of the First Amendment, the fact that what Robert A. G. Monks calls corpocracy is a genuine threat to democracy? How do we take on big forces such as the profound influence that corporations have, who unfortunately have claimed rights as individuals, which the Supreme Court never gave them, though it has been argued subsequently common law has made it into the practice. How do we come to terms with something that's as much a threat as closing down the First Amendment?
Oh, I wish I had a nice, easy answer to that.
I too.
I don't. It's the nature of our society and all modern societies that corporations have a lot of power. But it's power that can be countered. You know, when corporations do something notoriously bad, CEOs get fired. Of course, they make a home with a lot of money in their pocket. That's another matter. They lose their jobs, and corporations do change their policies as long as we have the right to criticize them. That's the only right we have.
So even as we look at the massive corporate influence within major media, which is really why I was thinking it, that too is a subject within the First Amendment's domain, isn't it?
Yes, but the First Amendment doesn't really speak to the power of money over, shall we say, broadcast networks or newspapers. In newspapers, which I know more about, the kind of independence and courage we look for that you and I have been talking about comes mostly from family ownership. When a newspaper becomes part of a great big corporation or chain, it loses that quality, that individual quality of determination and pluck that we look for. It doesn't have to, but it tends to.
Courage is where we end with this conversation, isn't it?
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it a lot.
It's been a joy to have you with us. Thank you, Anthony Lewis. Anthony Lewis's book, Freedom for the Thought That We Hate, is an important reminder that freedom is never free. We're grateful for this biography of the First Amendment, a living story we must nurture if we citizens are to remain sovereign instead of becoming subjects to would-be kings or aristocracies. We also thank Mr. Lewis for bringing this vital story to us. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.